Good evening, everyone. Welcome to this regular meeting of the Rancho Santa Margarita City Council. I'm going to call this meeting to order, and we will begin with our Pledge of Allegiance. Mayor Pro Tem, would you please lead us?
If you please rise, if you're able to, place your hand over your heart and recite the Pledge of Allegiance along with me. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Ms. City Clerk, could we have a roll call, please?
Mayor Beal.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem McGurr.
Here.
Councilmember Baird.
Here.
Councilmember Figueroa.
Here.
Councilmember Holloway.
Here.
Thank you very much. Item one, schedule of future events. Ms. City Manager.
Thank you very much, Mayor Beal and members of the City Council. The first item is that the July 23rd, 2025 City Council meeting is canceled. We canceled that early in January. It's typically the time that we cancel meetings every second meeting in July for the summer break. Next, the summer concert series is in full swing. The concerts are held at Central Park on Sundays from 6 to 8 p.m. The upcoming scheduled concerts are as follows. Sunday, July 13th, Flock of 80s. Sunday, July 20th, The Answer. July 27th, Redneck Rodeo. August 3rd, Wayward Sons. And then we will finish the series on August 10th with Spin Town, although we are having a special performance by the School of Rock Band at 4 p.m. Spin Town Band will begin at 6 p.m. And we also have the Dreamers Market and some children's activities that day from 4 to 8. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. That brings us to item two, which is council member comments and reports. 2.1, council member comments. To my left, anything tonight?
Nothing to add.
To my right? Council member Figueroa.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. If you're looking for some additional activities for your children this summer, just want to remind parents to check out our very own RSM library. There's a summer reading challenge happening right now. That's going on through August 3rd. Also, there are quite a few Meet the Author events this summer for children. That's going on through the end of July. And if you're a parent who's debating if your child's ready to enter school or not this fall, we have our kindergarten readiness program available at our library as well. So I just want to encourage parents to check all that out. And also, if you're looking for something fun to do with the kids, at San Francisco Solano Catholic Church this weekend, they're having their Fiesta de Solano. It's this Friday and Saturday night. It's from 5 to 10 p.m. And there's going to be live music, games, vendors, great food selections, and the rides are back this year as well. So we hope you can come out and join the fun. Thank you very much.
Thanks for those comments. Councilmember Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to remind everyone that come be inspired by extraordinary talent this summer at the RSM Community Center, where an art exhibit featuring local artists is on display in July and August, hosted by RSM Cares. The featured artists include Judy Carroll, who's a mosaic artist, Judy Cunningham, a watercolorist, Olga Gruny, a oil painting is her medium, and Carol Parsons does floral and landscape watercolors. The exhibit is free and open to the public at the Bell Tower Community Center throughout July and August. And as the City Council liaison to both the Capistrano and Saddleback Valley Unified School Districts, I'm pleased to share a brief update on recent outreach and collaboration efforts. In late April, I had the opportunity to meet with Dr. Chris Brown, who's the superintendent of Capistrano Unified, alongside with our assistant city manager. And then more recently, I met with Dr. Crystal Turner, who's the superintendent of Saddleback Valley Unified, and board president Susie Swartz, and also joining us was our city manager. These meetings were focused on strengthening our partnerships and supporting our local schools. A key topic of discussion was school safety, including the growing concerns around e-bike safety, and how we as a city can work collaboratively with both districts to address these issues proactively. It was encouraging to have an open, productive conversations about how we can continue to work together for the well-being of our students and families here in Rancho Santa Margarita. And I look forward to building on these relationships and bringing forward initiatives that enhance safety and support in our school communities. Finally, the Fire Safety and Preparedness Community Meeting and Readiness Expo is now available to watch on the city's YouTube channel. There's a fantastic lineup of speakers that shared critical tips and updates that are beneficial to all in our community. Thank you.
Thank you. That brings us to item 2.2, committee assignment reports. We have one tonight for the Orange County Fire Authority. Mayor Pro Tem McGurr.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. On June 26, I had the honor of attending the Orange County Fire Authority Fallen Heroes Memorial Ceremony, honoring those who have died in the line of duty with the Orange County Fire Authority over the years. That took place, again, on the morning of June 26, a very moving memorial. That evening, we had a very lengthy meeting with the Orange County Fire Authority. We approved and updated the community risk reduction fee schedule. We created a new position of lead helicopter crew chief, who would be responsible for safe and effective air operations and training and evaluation of all flight crew members. The significance of that cannot be lost. We just had a fire in Laguna Canyon, you may have read, in Bluebird Canyon 2 days ago that was put out largely because of the helicopter availability for the Orange County Fire Authority. And so without that being available, that fire would have been a heck of a lot worse than it is than it was. It's not lost on me that we're discussing that at the Orange County Fire Authority on June 26, and tonight we're discussing our local hazard mitigation plan, which also includes a recitation, if you will, on the risk of fire, wildfire in our community. So with that all being said, it was a very productive meeting, and it just once again reassures me that we have the very best professionals guarding our safe well-being from the Orange County Fire Authority. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bringing us to item 3, presentations and proclamations. Tonight we have one, and Mayor Pro Tem, if you would please join me in front of the dais. Sure. We could do the special certificate of recognition. So this is item 3.1, which is a certificate of recognition and a business recognition to Alissimo Coffee and Roasting. And then so at this time, I would like to invite forward the owner of the Alissimo Coffee, Clement A. Young. Glad to have you here tonight, Clement. And I'd like to share with the audience the contents of our city's certificate of recognition. The City Council of Rancho Santa Margarita gratefully acknowledges local businesses that achieve excellence in quality, service, and community engagement. And Alissimo Coffee and Roasting, which was established in 2017, has earned a reputation for meticulous sourcing, boutique, in-house roasting, and an unwavering commitment to delivering the finest cup of coffee in town, sourcing beans from 9 distinguished regions to bring a world-class experience to their customers. And through their welcoming cafe atmosphere, complete with cozy seating and a friendly baristas, Alissimo invites guests to savor a mini staycation with exceptional coffee, tea, and locally partnered treats in collaboration with Black Market Bakery, Crema Bakery, Duncan Mills Tea, and Renegade Goods. Numerous accolades reflect community admiration, including being ranked among the top small businesses in Rancho Santa Margarita and earning praise on Yelp as the best place to get coffee in RSM. Alissimo Coffee has actively supported the community, hosting events such as Coffee with a Cop in partnership with the city and local law enforcement to foster community connections. The City of Rancho Santa Margarita celebrates businesses that cultivate this type of community pride, provide meaningful gathering spaces, and consistently delivering high-quality offerings with warmth and care. So Clement is the mayor of the city. On behalf of my city council colleagues and all the residents of this great city, we want to recognize you, take this opportunity to say thank you for all you do for our community, and to congratulate Elissimo Coffee and Roasting for your excellent business. Thank you, sir. So, Clement, in addition to the certificate of recognition that is first and foremost from the city of Rancho Santa Margarita, you've also just been presented with a certificate of recognition from our 71st District State Assemblywoman, Kate Sanchez, from our 38th District State Senator, Catherine Blakespear, and from all the way from Washington, D.C., from our United States Congresswoman, Young Kim. They all send their congratulations to you as well. Would you like to say anything?
Sure. Honestly, this is one of the best cities I've ever seen. Great community. The customers are amazing. The city council is amazing. Like, even the sheriff's department is amazing. Like, I don't know you personally, but I've seen a lot of your workers, and they're amazing. So, like, I have nothing bad to say about the city at all. It's, like, amazing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Clement. Let's take some photos. All right, continuing on with tonight's agenda, that brings us to item 4, public comments. This is the first of two opportunities tonight to address the City Council on any matter that is not listed on the City Council's agenda, and that is within the subject matter jurisdiction of this City Council. Public comments are limited to 3 minutes per person, and a time limit of 15 minutes for this segment of the public comments portion of the agenda. There will be one additional public comment section at the tail end of our agenda tonight. So, council colleagues, I want to call your attention to the fact that we have received two e-comments. You each have a copy in front of you. They're both from Sean Gordon. He submitted one with the kiosk suggestion for the Bell Tower Regional Community Center, and his second e-comment dealt with landscaping issues on Las Flores and Villa Con Dios. We also now have, I believe, four individuals that would like to deliver their public comments in person. So I'm going to call up first Mr. Chris McLaughlin. Good evening, Chris. Welcome.
Good evening, Mayor, City Council. I've always thought that local government functions best when it's focused on what we're going to pay for and how we're going to pay for it. To that end, I don't want any of my local property taxes going to fund federal immigration enforcement. What I mean is the property taxes that I pay to the County of Orange that come back from the county to RSM that the city then turns around and gives back to the county in the form of half of our city budget going to the police services contract with the Orange County Sheriff's Department, I don't want any of that being used to enforce federal immigration laws. That money should be strictly used for actual public safety and enforcing state laws. I also pay federal income taxes, so that's my contribution to funding federal immigration enforcement. On that note, Young Kim, along with every other Republican member of the House of Representatives, except for two, recently voted to spend $30 billion on ICE enforcement, which is three times their current annual budget. They also approved another $45 billion for detention facilities and even more billions to finish building the wall. So they've got plenty of money, apparently, for the National Deportation Program and don't need any help from our local sheriff's deputies. The thing is, though, and this is what has really gotten really twisted with the national narrative on immigration, is that we here in California know the difference between actual criminal aliens who committed real crimes and all of the hardworking, tax-paying brown people who just weren't born here. For a bit of historical context, I recently came across Ronald Reagan's final speech as president in 1989. It's a really great speech. It's about 4 minutes, and you can easily find it if you search for Reagan pro-immigration speech. Paraphrasing a bit here, but his main point was that you can go to live in France or Japan, but you cannot become a Frenchman or Japanese, but that anyone from any corner of the earth can come to live in America and become an American. Today that sounds like some radical left globalist propaganda, but that was Ronald Reagan reminding everyone that welcoming immigrants to our country is not only something that has always made our nation great, but if they ever shut the door on welcoming new immigrants from around the world, we would significantly lose our place as a global leader. So I'm not sure what happened to the conservative movement in America, but in 36 years, we went from Ronald Reagan and a shining city on a hill and the U.S. being a beacon of freedom and hope for the world to Stephen Miller and everyone who wasn't born here needs to go, regardless of whether they've committed a real crime or not. So I don't know about the rest of the country, but here in California, we aren't confused about immigrants being bad for America. And that's not my words. That's coming from Ronald Reagan, the former governor of California and the patron saint of the modern Republican Party. Here we can tell the difference between a gang member with tattoos covering his face and neck and an old guy in Anaheim who's been mowing lawns here for 30 years, whose three sons all stepped on the yellow footprints at Parris Island. So I don't want any of my local property taxes that are dedicated for local law enforcement to go towards helping ICE. I would expect our police services to respond to a request from ICE for assistance with a hard no. Here we know that if you're using tax records to target illegals, it was never about immigrants not paying taxes. If you're raiding workplaces to round up deportees, it was never about immigrants not having a job. If you're deporting women and children, it was never about criminal gang members. If you're seizing people at their immigration hearings, it was never about immigrants following the process and doing it the legal way. And if you're stoked to have the first escaped detainee mauled to death by an alligator in Florida, please don't call yourself a Christian ever again. Good night. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you for those comments. Next up is Amber Bloom. Good evening, Amber. Welcome.
Good evening. I'm short, so I'm going to try and get this podium down. Good evening. Just as a correction, my name is Bloomer, but thank you. I probably didn't spell things correctly on the form, so no worries.
My apologies.
No problem at all. At the start of our council meeting last time, Council Member Figueroa stated as what seemed like fact that there would be a 65-cent increase in the cost of gallon of gas effective July 1st. I just wanted to point out that that did not actually happen. So if anybody actually saw that, I would be very surprised. I have to admit, at the time, I was slightly confused about why this was mentioned. We normally address RSM issues. And while that does impact the people of RSM, it's not something over which the local city council has any jurisdiction. So as I mentioned, there was actually no increase in the gallon of gas, except for a 1.6 cent per gallon increase, not a 65 cent increase. This was in actual fact due to an automatic annual adjustment built into Senate Bill 1, SB 1, also known as the Road Repair and Accountability Act of 2017, which was approved by legislature in 2017 and by voters in 2018. I'm not sure why that was brought up. I have a suspicion, but it's only a suspicion, so it's my assumption, that perhaps it was regarding the fact that possibly it was put in because of Governor Newsom's office. So I also just want to point out that at that point in time, when that bill went into place, Governor Newsom was not in office, and in actual fact, it had nothing to do with Governor Newsom. So to be clear, for about the fourth or fifth time, there was no new 65-cent tax per gallon on gas. And we should use accurate facts, not myths or anything else, when we come to talking about impacts on RSM residents. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Tasha Search. Good evening, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council. My name is Tasia Search.
I'm a 30-year resident of the city of Rancho Santa Margarita. I was born in Pocatello, Idaho, lived in the U.S. my entire life. I'm here tonight because I'm horrified and disgusted with what is happening in our country right now. Notably in California, Los Angeles, and Orange County. I'm calling upon the City Council tonight to make a resolution, making a call to action to all of its federal elected representatives in Congress to advocate on behalf of immigrants who reside and work in the city of Rancho Santa Margarita to remove ICE, military, and other federal enforcement personnel from the city of Rancho Santa Margarita, and call for the support to the impact, the people impacted by immigration raids and their actions and commitments. To that end, I'm asking the City Council to vote to direct the city manager to establish an emergency assistance program for families impacted by immigration enforcement using $100,000 from the city events budget without canceling any events. The City Council should also direct staff to bring back a report within 90 days on the status of the assistance fund for consideration of additional funding. And lastly, on a more personal note, no one talks about what happens in the minutes after someone is taken. It's a car still idling, a car seat in the back, a wallet sitting on the dash, half a breakfast sandwich on the floorboard, still warm. There are children too, some in the back seat, some dropped off at daycare, never picked up, some waiting at a bus stop for parents who never arrive. You don't need to be a legal scholar to know this is wrong. You just need to be human. Thank you.
Thank you, Tasia. Next up is Breanne Boyle. Good evening, Breanne. Welcome.
Hi. Good to see you again. First, I want to plus one Chris and Tasia's comments. Wanted to come today and say I spoke to the City Council on June 25th, the last meeting, about the ongoing lawsuit with Michelle Jackson over the redistricting maps that RSM approved. At that meeting, I was told by both the mayor and city attorney that my facts were wrong. In fact, I was told off the record that I was embarrassing myself. So I asked for clarification and filed a public records request. In response, the city sent me 105 pages of PDFs, no summary, no explanation. But here's what I learned. The current map created by the council allows three members who live near each other by the golf course to remain in office and run again. The map leaves out the central part of town, which doesn't have the same representation. The city confirmed that Jackson followed the California Voting Rights Act by sending a notice of violation, which is a step one in the legal process. Some council members have said what Jackson is doing is illegal. That word illegal was used, so I dug deeper. Jackson submitted a legal letter under the California Voting Rights Act asking RSM to redistrict for more equitable voting. The city complied, splitting RSM into four districts with an at-large mayor. Three council members ended up in the same neighborhood. That redistricting was legal. If someone believes their voting rights are harmed, they have the right to sue, and that's what's happening. Whether that claim has merit is for the courts to decide, not the council or me. That's not what I'm here to do. What I do know, under the new system, the mayor now picks planning commissioners, and the council just ratifies them. Before, each member had their own pick, so that's a major shift in power. Legal fees to fight the Jackson suit so far total around $38,000, with Jackson's requested invoice at $37,500. The case hasn't gone to court yet. Other cities have paid the invoice and moved on. Those that fought ended up paying far more. At the last meeting, I was told I didn't know the facts by some members of this council. They told me that during my public comment after the meeting when no one was recording. I'm here to say I do know the facts. I only have a few minutes here, but there is more. I got one number wrong last meeting. Sorry about that. But the larger issue is real. This is about power. Remember, some of these members have been on council since the city was founded, and some on this council are doing everything they can to keep that power. But we can vote them out in 2026. Thank you.
Thanks for your comments. I have no other speaker request cards. Okay. Thank you very much. We'll move on to the consent calendar. All matters on the consent calendar are to be approved in one motion unless a council member, staff member, or member of the public requests separate action on any consent calendar item. I'm going to pull item 5.4 at the request of one of our residents. And do we need to pull any other items other than 5.4?
I'll move the balance of the consent calendar.
We have a motion to approve the balance of the consent calendar. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. That motion carries unanimously. So we'll now handle 5.4 separately. This is an adoption of an ordinance related to the fire hazard severity zone map for the city of Rancho Santa Margarita local responsibility area. We've already got the staff report before us, which we've all reviewed. So I'm going to call forward at this point a member of the public that wished to speak on this matter, and that is Craig Innes. Good evening, Craig. Welcome.
Good evening, council members and staff. I was at the last council meeting 2 weeks ago, and I spoke up against the egregious ordinance that you're planning to endorse tonight. And I'd like to address Pro Tem Mayor McGurr's comments that insurance companies don't consider the CAL FIRE rating system. That's not true. They wouldn't have pulled out of California if they had not. And they wouldn't have set up a fair plan, or it's been set up, but they wouldn't have admitted one-third of the insured in that plan are in moderate fire areas. I think that they are aware of the CAL FIRE map, and I think the CAL FIRE map is an egregious disservice to the community here. And I'd like for you to stand up for that opposition to that map. It's based on purely AI data, machine biased data, that's based on prior history, which AI data is, and that prior history is a distortion of the facts that this community is not in a very high fire area that we are. The fire hazard that we had in September last year was a man-made ignition from a public utility truck, the airport fire, that was not a natural fire. And why are we being penalized for this act? And why is it being proposed that we address this with an ordinance that will address that with penalties, fees, if there's not adherence to the ordinance? There's 14 sections in that ordinance, not just that one section you have up for what it says and sequence. But there are 14 additional sections in that. And two of those sections pertain to fees or fines. One section pertains to a public nuisance if there's a violation. Now, that's a misdemeanor, and these fines can go on your tap property taxes. And I don't believe that that's fair, because these maps, there's a swath in Rancho Santa Margarita. You said that 70% came under moderate, high, and very high. That doesn't include the whole city. 70% is not the whole city. And structural components of that swath that is not included are structural homes or apartments or condominiums. A structural fire is hotter, burns hotter and longer than a tree on fire. I have 200 trees on the property I live on. And surrounding the property are 60 trees that are Sam Larks, responsibility. And those trees have not been trimmed for a long time. There's dead limbs in it, and there are full growth trees. And I'm not against trees at all. A tree it takes in 45 pounds of CO2 every year. That's almost 10,000 pounds of CO2 with 200 trees we have on the property. And that's equal to that amount in oxygen that it releases. Sam Lark.
Craig, you're going to have to wrap up your comments now. I'm sorry.
I wanted to ask the city to coordinate with Sam Lark. I'm not sure the dotted line there is stronger than my dotted line, and have them trim the trees around the property, because they are a fire danger. Thank you.
Thank you, Craig. Okay. So I appreciate our speaker's comments, and he made them at our last meeting as well. My recollection from reading the staff report and from our last meeting is the city of Rancho Santa Margarita is mandated to adopt these maps by the state, and our only discretion would be to make the maps more severe, more onerous upon the residents. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So are you able to address what could happen to the city if we did not adopt what is before us tonight? What can the state, what would the state do to us?
Yes. Thank you, Mayor, members of the council. Yeah, it's not just Rancho Santa Margarita. It's all cities in the state of California are required to adhere to this program, to the timeframes for adoption of these ordinances, to adopt maps. In my opinion, if cities do not do so, it will be referred to the California Attorney General's office for a writ of mandate to compel the cities to do so. To my knowledge, no city has not complied at this time.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions for staff? Not, I'd entertain a motion to adopt the staff recommendation on 5.4.
So moved.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you. And thank you for your comments, Craig. All right, that concludes the consent calendar. We'll now move on to public hearing items under item 6.1. The City of Rancho Santa Margarita Local Hazard Mitigation Plan Adoption and Safety Element Update. Ms. Kuda, good evening.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the City Council. Our consultant, Starla Barker with DeNovo Planning Group, will provide a brief presentation. This is a follow-up to an item you all saw last November. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, good evening. As Cheryl mentioned, my name is Starla Barker with DeNovo Planning Group, and I have been before you before. I'm happy to be back this evening to present kind of the, one of the last steps of the hazard mitigation plan. I wanted to just briefly go over for the audience and just a brief reminder what we're talking about when we're talking about a local hazard mitigation plan, why the city is updating the current plan, the review process, the general plan safety element amendment that's also before you, as well as next steps. So just a brief reminder, hazard mitigation plan, it is a local specific to the city of Rancho Santa Margarita. It does identify hazards that have a likelihood of occurring and the community's risk and vulnerability to those hazards. The crux of the mitigation plan is the mitigation actions that look at opportunities to actually reduce those vulnerabilities and risks. Understanding we can't eliminate natural hazards, but the opportunity to see if we can lessen the risk and vulnerabilities associated with those, and then providing policies and actions to increase resilience. So the city is updating the hazard mitigation plan to basically confirm and update the threats and hazards, including the risks. The plan is required by FEMA to be updated every 5 years, so this is in line with that 5-year update. Looking at making the community more disaster resistant, and really most importantly, is making sure that the city can maintain eligibility for federal emergency grant funds that become eligible when you have a FEMA compliant and adopted hazard mitigation plan. So the review process, just to recall, we were in front of the Planning Commission last November. The Planning Commission did provide comments and recommended that the City Council authorize submittal of the hazard mitigation plan to Cal OES. Excuse me, Cal OES is required to review the plan, provide comments, ensure that all the requirements are being met, and prior to submitting to FEMA. We came before you on November 13th of last year and received authorization to submit the hazard mitigation plan to Cal OES for their review. Cal OES review occurred from November of last year to February of this year. They did determine that all requirements were met. One requirement was identified in identified as met but needs improvement. It basically involved minor revisions to describe vulnerabilities to specific hazards and clarify that the plan addressed climate change, basically some terminology corrections. So once those revisions were made and submitted back to Cal OES, Cal OES determined that they found that the plan was compliant and submitted it to FEMA for their review. That occurred from March to April of this year, and we did receive what FEMA issues as approvable pending adoption. They didn't have any additional comments or revisions necessary to make sure that the plan was compliant. We were before the Planning Commission last month, and the Planning Commission did recommend City Council approval of an amendment to the general plan safety element, which I will describe in a minute, as well as adoption of the local hazard mitigation plan. So the purpose of the general plan safety element amendment is AB 2140 does provide opportunity for additional state funding cost share on eligible projects. In order to make sure that the city is compliant, you have to have an adopted, a FEMA-approved adopted hazard mitigation plan, and it has to be adopted into the general plan safety element. So really the amendment to the safety element is just a text amendment, making sure that the language is specific to this hazard mitigation plan and adoption of the hazard mitigation plan. It also it requires that you make sure that the hazard mitigation plan is easily accessible, available to the public. The hazard mitigation plan has always been available on the city's website. It will continue to be available. So the next steps is here tonight to request City Council adoption and approval of the resolutions for the general plan amendment to the safety element, as well as to adopt the local hazard mitigation plan. After this, we will, if approved, the adopted resolution will be submitted to FEMA and to Cal OES for what then we receive final approval of the plan. We also have to demonstrate that the city did incorporate by reference the hazard mitigation plan into the safety element, and that's provided to Cal OES. We would receive FEMA final approval and also Cal OES approval for AB 2140. That is my presentation. I'm here for questions if needed.
Thank you very much for that report and for the very comprehensive plan that's in our written materials. Council colleagues, do you have any questions for staff?
I do not.
Councilmember Figueroa.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. So I guess what I was inquiring, the local hazard mitigation plan gets updated every 5 years, you said, correct? Is that a state mandate?
It's required by FEMA.
It's required by FEMA. Okay. All right. So every 5 years, we're going to be seeing this again. And whatever disasters happen in the state of California, I'm sure that the FEMA puts those in, right, in terms of what we would be looking at on the revisions?
Yeah. So when the plan is updated, you go back and look from the time that the plan had started to be initiated and updated this time, what has occurred since then? Has anything changed? Anything changed specific to the local city? Any events that have occurred? Any state emergencies? Anything like that? Or just all updated from that previous time?
Okay. And the grant funding that was available from AB 2140, what was the amount that the city received from that?
So the AB 2140 is the bill that allows us to receive extra cost share based on this approved document and its implementation into the safety element. So there's no funding currently, but it makes us eligible for funding in the future.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Ms. Mayor.
Thank you. Last chance, any questions for staff? Okay, then this is a public hearing item, so I'm going to open the public hearing. And this would be the time for us to receive any public testimony. Ms. City Clerk, I don't believe I have any speaker request cards.
We have none.
Okay. Anyone care to speak? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing and turn the matter over to my counsel for discussion and deliberation and a motion. To my right, any comments, questions, discussion?
No, but I'll move the item.
Okay. We have a motion to approve the staff recommendation before us. Did you have
second.
A question?
No, sorry. Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any other comments before I call for the vote? Okay. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? That carries unanimously. Thank you. Bringing us to item 6.2. adoption of a general plan amendment 25-001 to update the circulation element, and adoption of the third addendum to the 2020 general plan final environmental impact report. Ms. Kuda, once again.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council. This circulation element update is the last of a number of general plan updates. I'll give a little bit of history of the city's general plan. So as you're aware, state law requires every city to adopt a general plan. It has seven mandatory elements. A general plan is a long-range plan to guide development of the city, and it generally has a 10 to 20-year shelf life. It identifies the community's priorities and a vision for the future. The city's first general plan was adopted in 2002. In 2020, we did a fairly comprehensive update where we updated the land use, noise, safety, conservation, open space, and economic development elements. And then along with the state cycle, we updated the housing element in 2022, and that went along with another update to the safety element as required by state law. And then last year, we updated the land use element to be consistent with that housing element. The circulation element has not been updated since 2014, and this with this update, we'll have a fully updated general plan with a nice long shelf life. The focus of this update is to update the regulatory setting for new legislation and for internal consistency with all those other updates that I just talked about. Also, we are recommending implementation of transportation study guidelines, which I'll talk about in a moment. All of the city's general plan elements follow the same framework. They all have an introduction, which describes the purpose and intent of that element. There's an issues, goals, and policies section, which describes the goals and policies for that topic area. And then there's a plan, which is an overview of the potential actions to implement those goals and policies. This circulation element follows that same structure. It serves as a guide for future development, and the intent of this circulation element is to provide for a balanced multimodal network for all roadway users. That's a concept called complete streets, which we'll talk about in a moment. Here I've summarized four notable goal and policy changes. That is to promote safe and accessible circulation system that accommodates all user types. Again, that's known as complete streets. Policy 1.9 integrates some of the concepts from the safety element. Policy 1.6 discusses those transportation study guidelines. And then policy 2.3, we will work with regional partners to plan for emerging transportation modes and technologies. That's a very brief update of some of the more significant goal and policy updates. Attachment C to your staff report includes a table that looks like this, which is a side-by-side summary of the changes from the 2014 circulation element to what is proposed tonight. The transportation study guidelines, I just want to touch on briefly. We are not proposing those tonight. We did take those to the Planning Commission back a couple of months ago, but on the very same day as the transportation study guidelines and this circulation element were to go before our Planning Commission, there was a court case decided and published which changed the way that the city is able to utilize certain guidance from OPR, the Office of Planning and Research. So we have pulled those transportation study guidelines back. We are working through that issue, and we do anticipate having those ready shortly in the next couple of months. Those will be important because they will ensure that there's consistent evaluation of all future development projects. Really, this is good because we do have the ability to have additional housing development come in through those housing element sites that were approved last year, and this will set forth some guidance for evaluation of traffic impacts for those and any other project that comes forward. Again, you're all aware of the requirements for environmental review. Any update to the general plan is considered a project and is subject to the California Environmental Quality Act, or CEQA. The City Council adopted a general plan program level EIR back in 2020, and so we are able to tier off of that EIR for subsequent updates to our general plan as long as we can find that the update doesn't result in any new significant environmental impacts or a substantial increase in severity of a previously identified significant impact. We can do that. We can make that finding with this circulation element update, and there's an addendum in your packet which walks through all of those facts. So with that, staff's recommendation tonight is to adopt two resolutions. The first resolution adopts that CEQA addendum to comply with the California Environmental Quality Act, and the second resolution will adopt that update to the general plan circulation element. That concludes my presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions. Our consultants are here in the audience, as well as our principal planner, who was the project manager. Thank you,
Ms. Kuda. Appreciate that report. Council colleagues, any questions for staff? Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you. I'm looking at pages 23 and 24 of the staff report, and it references, these are maps, and it has obviously the borders of the city of Rancho Santa Margarita, which, as we all know, does not include Coto de Casa or Las Flores or Wagon Wheel, but there's a sphere of influence line. And I'm wondering, what is the significance of that? Frankly, I saw it also on the hazard mitigation plan as well. What is this, the effect? Anything that we adopt, does it? I can't imagine it affects unincorporated areas. But.
That's correct, Mr. Mayor Pro Tem. It's just it's a boundary that is kind of part of the city's official boundary. It's a sphere of influence where if annexations were to occur, that's where LAFCO has identified that potential. You're correct. Nothing that we do here affects those areas. It's just throughout the general plan, you'll see that we'll have the corporate boundary as well as the sphere of influence. It's just for consistency throughout the different general plan elements.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for the clarification.
Thank you. To my right, any questions for staff? Thank you once again for your report. And from the written materials and your oral report today, this seems rather minor in terms of the changes and updates that we've made, just minor text changes to better reflect the community's circulation needs and referencing updated statutes that have come into place since the last adoption. There's really nothing material being changed here. Is that?
That's correct. It's a update, not a strong revision.
Thank you. Okay. So once again, this is a public hearing item. Unless there's any other questions for staff, I'm going to open the public hearing. And this would be the time for the council to receive testimony from the public. Once again, I have no speaker request cards. Would anyone care to speak? You need to fill out a card, but you can do that after you speak. Brianne, come on up.
Yeah, I need to just say anything. You could talk, but that's fine. So I have a question for you. I'm sorry, is it Ms. Kuda? Okay, I want to pronounce it right. So circulation is for, like, traffic movement, too, throughout the city. Is that part of it?
Brianne, you're supposed to make a comment. It's not really a discussion back and forth.
I thought you said it was a public hearing.
It is. So this is your opportunity to give us your testimony, your thoughts on what is before us.
Oh, I was just trying
tell
to clarify.
Tell us all your questions and we can address them.
Okay. I'll just check the policies and procedures and come back next time and let you know. But so I have questions around if it includes traffic, because the stuff that was put up there was pretty generic. If it does, then does it also include in the general plan what the council passed last year, which was the cameras that are all filming all of us called the Flock? Is that part of that as well? Okay, so that's my question, and it
thank
will just
you.
Stay in the air. Great, thank you.
Thank you, I appreciate it. With the Flock cameras are a tool for our police services to utilize to monitor traffic flow in the event that there have been crimes. It helps to track down criminals. Chief, I don't know if you'd like to address that in a little more detail.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. The Flock cameras are an investigative tool for law enforcement. So contrary to the misconception that Big Brother or law enforcement's always watching you, what we're doing is monitoring criminal activity, if necessary, based on license plate information only, if that makes sense. Thank you.
And as far as traffic being included in the circulation element, did you want to just address that?
Yes, all types of circulation, vehicular and non-vehicular, are addressed in the circulation element.
Thank you. Appreciate that clarification.
If I may, the Flock cameras do not record traffic, and so they're not part of the circulation element. They're
right.
License plate readers.
It's license plate readers.
And they take still photos of license plates. They don't monitor. They don't record traffic. They are not a part of the traffic circulation system.
Thank you. I appreciate that clarification. And Brianne, if you haven't, if you would fill out a card and give it to our city clerk for this item, that would be great. Thank you. Anyone else? All right, seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing and turn the matter over to the City Council. Council colleagues, questions, comments? Council Member Holloway.
Just thanks to staff for all this, both of these updates. Large amount of work, a lot of information. Thank you for what you do. Very thorough. That's why we probably don't have many questions. We've seen most of this, so thank you for what you've done here. Thank you.
Appreciate that. Mayor Pro Tem?
Just very briefly, I would concur. And for those who aren't familiar with the fact and they're just looking at the a PowerPoint presentation, our book is this book, this thick. And so one reason why, as Councilmember Holloway just mentioned, there are not a lot of questions because pretty much everything's been answered already. So thank you, Ms. Kuda, for a very thorough presentation. I appreciate it.
Am I right? All right. So we've concluded with the council discussion. Is there a motion to adopt the staff recommendations, both of the resolutions that are proposed?
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you. That brings us to item 6.3. which is a proposed update to the city's false alarm fee. Chief, you're up. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. So currently the false alarm fee for sheriff response is set at $141. The increase is set to go to $209. And what that is after the third and subsequent false alarm that law enforcement responds to, the businesses and or residents will be charged these fees. So the proposal is for the city to adopt the county's ordinance for the false alarm fee to increase from $141 to $209. And again, that's for after the third and subsequent response of a false alarm or an intentional alarm setting.
Thank you, Chief. Do I understand correctly that a business owner could have in 1 year three free false alarms?
That is correct.
And so there's no fee of any kind if it happens three times. It's only on the fourth time when we're trying to nudge them to.
Right, that's correct. And according to the county, this is meant to correct certain behaviors, right? So sometimes there are systems that are faulty, and the fees are meant to encourage both residents and business owners to, number one, correct any systems that are generating a false alarm so that it doesn't, for lack of better words, waste police resources, and to make sure that when we do respond, it's for the correct timing and for what we need to respond for, which is an actual alarm and not an accident. So if you're going to continue to get accidental alarms, and after the third one, then you will be receiving a charge. And that fee is going to go from $141 to $209.
Can you address what sort of resources are expended when there is an alarm like this that goes off?
Absolutely. So a burglar alarm is going to generate a police response from our deputies, typically just based on the nature of the alarm and the information that we receive from the alarm company. Typically one and or two deputies will respond to the location. A lot of times that takes some resources depending on the location. For example, a Kohl's or a large establishment will take a lot of time for deputies to determine if the alarm is legitimate or not. So that takes away our resources from serving the rest of the community where it's needed. A lot of times it can take 30 minutes, 40 minutes. It just depends on the nature of the location and the circumstances involved.
So if your deputies are responding to one of those alarms and are tied up for a half hour, that could mean longer response times to other members of the community that might have a real emergency.
That's correct. And we need to determine if the alarm is legitimate or not. So we can't just show up to a location and say it's false. There has to be a certain checks that we go through, making sure that the business is secure, that there's no broken windows, broken locks, and that can take some time. Meanwhile, there's other activity going on in the city, and we don't have unlimited resources, so that takes away our response from serving the public elsewhere.
Can you confirm the last time that the fee was set?
I believe that was in 2000.
No, it was 2021.
2021, correct. 2021 was the last fee, and it was at $141.
Okay, and we're just bringing it in consistency with the county number.
That is correct.
Okay.
Yes. Also, I'd add that the county did request that their cities increase the fee to match. So it wasn't just we saw it and decided to bring it, but it was a request by the County of Orange and the Sheriff's Department to actually implement this increased fee as a match.
Across all the cities?
Across all of the cities that they serve, yes.
Okay. Appreciate that clarification. Colleagues, any questions for staff? Councilmember Figueroa.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Chief, I was just wondering, do you know by chance how often our deputies respond to false alarms, like, for example, on a weekly basis, how many calls you might get?
I can't give you a weekly basis, but I was able to pull some data for responses since 2024 to June of this year, and it looks like we responded to 80 false alarm calls. So, I mean, we can do the math on average, but 80 in the last 18 months.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Other questions for staff? No. Councilmember Holloway.
Thank you. Not a question, but just a comment. Thank you, Chief, for looking into this. It is a drain on resources. Certainly want to respond. Do you feel like the businesses, I know you've been here just a short time, but you worked in other agencies, that this fine, if you will, after the third time, does motivate the business owner? And I assume the bulk of these are businesses, not residential. Is that fair to say?
That's correct. According to the data that I pulled, there was not one resident that was billed.
Do you feel like this fee, if you will, motivates business owners to have better communication with their alarm companies or whatever needs to be done?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Seeing no other questions, I'm going to open the public hearing, and this would be the time to receive testimony from the public. I don't believe I have any speaker request cards. Would anyone care to speak on this item? All right. Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing and turn this matter over to the City Council for any discussion or a motion to adopt the staff's recommendation, the resolution as set forth under item 6.3.
I will move this item.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries unanimously. Thank you. All right. That brings us to item 7, new business. There is none. 8, continued items. We have none. So we now are at item 9, public comments. This is the second and last time to address the City Council on any matter not listed on our agenda, but that is within the subject matter jurisdiction of the City Council. And I have 2 speakers that have asked to address the council now. First up is Amber Bloomer.
Hi.
Hi, Amber.
I want to switch glasses. First of all, I just wanted to recognize Jennifer Cervantes. I really see that you know your stuff. Like, you chime in with all lots of information, so I really appreciate your knowledge. It's really useful. To the council, I wanted to ask, there's this confusion about when you can respond and when you can't. It's really unclear to me when you can respond and when you can't, and I'm hoping that we can get some clarification. At the last meeting, I asked a question about how the public can get items placed on the agenda. I was told, I believe, that the council can't actually respond during public comment, and yet as I walked away on a different subject, Mayor Beale, you actually responded, and the same thing happened this evening. So I'm really genuinely curious about how that whole system works. We give public comment. We sometimes get comments, we don't sometimes. So I'm just curious how that works.
Sure.
So in general, I have 2 questions. One, and how can council members respond to public comments and questions without resorting to private after-meeting conversations? I believe the public would be very interested in hearing the answers to some of the questions that are being raised. In addition, it would save council members time as they wouldn't have to address the public separately on the same topic after the meeting time and time again, as we'd all hear the response in a meeting. And I'll be perfectly honest, I appreciate anybody's offer to have a conversation with me after the meeting, but I'm actually not comfortable doing that anymore, so I don't know how I get answers or responses to these questions. Secondly, as I asked last week, which is where I started with this whole thing, how can members of the public get an item added to the City Council agenda? It's my understanding that it requires two council members to agree to add an item to the city meeting agenda, which effectively means that if I can't convince somehow two council members to add something to the agenda, it just doesn't get added. And I understand we can't kind of willy-nilly just add items left and right, but I would love to see some adjustments so that public members can actually get items for discussion and that there is some form of discussion. Maybe I'm missing some other meeting that there is normally. I don't know. But again, I don't know what the process is. So if I could get some feedback somehow, that would be really useful. Thank you.
Thank you, Amber. I appreciate your comments. I'll share with you briefly, the California Brown Act limits our ability to engage in a lengthy discussion on any item that is not listed on the agenda. We have a little bit of discretion to give a quick response. Mr. City Attorney, maybe you could just briefly address the comments.
Mayor Beal, you were correct. The issue is governed by state law. It's the Ralph M. Brown Act. And the answers to the questions that have been raised, at least question number one, is set forth in City Council Policy Number 4.4. Residents are able to obtain that in the back room and also a copy of it from the city clerk's office. But that does answer question number one. It provides what can and cannot be done by the city council with respect to non-agendized items. It sets forth a very clear answer to that question.
Any comment about placing items on the agenda, how that happens?
Placing items on the agenda is controlled by the city council. This is a representative form of government, and that I believe the speaker did answer the question correctly.
It takes
her knowledge
two
is
council
correct.
Members.
Correct.
Correct. That's the answer. Okay. Our next speaker is Breanne Boyle. Good evening, Breanne. Welcome.
Hi. So good to see you guys again. So actually, this is great because I have a comment that's similar to Procedure 4.4. So at the June 25th meeting that I was at, the last meeting, I spoke during the public comment section, and after I spoke, Mayor Tony Beal addressed me directly while I was at the podium. He stated his version of the story I was sharing and then followed with this, and I quote from the June 25th recording, "Just wanted to make sure you were aware of what the facts actually are." This was Tony Beal making a public rebuttal to my statement without giving me a chance to respond. To make sure I understood the public comment process correctly, I reviewed the city's policies and procedures, section 4.4, which says, one, council members may question speakers, but only after being recognized by the presiding officer. Two, they may not engage speakers in dialogue, only in a question and answer format. Three, during public comment on non-agenda items, council members shall not engage in extended discussion or deliberation. Presume that also means after a meeting. After reading those, it seems like a clear violation from Mayor Beal in the last meeting. Despite that, I was invited to speak to the mayor off record after the meeting, away from the public forum. Today, I want to ask the council to respect its own policies and that the format that protects transparency in public comment. Now, a shift to something else that's important. Based on something with the budget, the $21,845 decrease in building maintenance costs in the 2024-2025 budget, which covers things like city hall decorations, I'd like to ask that the city consider buying one pride flag. One, to fly during the month of June to represent RSM city residents. It seems there's enough money for that. I also want to voice support for Councilmember Bayard's request in the last meeting to explore adding more suicide prevention signs to the Antonio Parkway Bridge. Last meeting, Councilmember Holloway said, it's hard to determine the value of those signs. I believe the cost of a few signs is worth it if they save even one life. And if the budget is the issue, I'm confident this community would donate, whether for those signs or for a pride flag. I know I would do that, but I shouldn't have to. Thank you.
Thank you, Breanne. I'm confident there was no violation after the last meeting had concluded, because you are able to give a brief response. And after a meeting is concluded, I believe California law provides no restrictions on the ability of council members to speak freely to their constituents and share information and thoughts. Mr. City Manager, or City Attorney, can you just
Yes, that's exactly correct. Once the meeting is concluded, individual council members are free to meet with their constituents, whether that's residents or business owners. The Brown Act only applies to council members, and with respect to public comments, it's during a noticed, agendized City Council meeting where the rules and limitations about public comments and non-agendized items are prevalent. And again, City Council Policy 4.4 is quite clear on that point, and it tracks state law. It's not ambiguous, and it's not subject to interpretation.
Thank you for that clarification. I have no other speaker requests tonight, so we're going to move on to item 10, the City Manager's Report. Ms. City Manager.
I have nothing to report this evening.
Okay, thank you. Item 11, matters presented by the mayor and council members. Anything to my left? Mayor Pro Tem?
Very briefly, I want to thank everyone sitting up here, as well as the public, for showing up at Pavilions, I think two Saturdays ago, to collect food for RSM Cares, for those in need here in Rancho Santa Margarita. We collected a lot of food. Three truckloads of food were eventually stored away for the RSM Care food pantry, which provides food for the underprivileged or those in need twice a month. So thank you to all who showed up at Pavilions, including my city council colleagues, to work the booth. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anything? Anything to my right, Carrie? Okay, so that concludes item number 11. We're now done with our agenda. We're going to adjourn. The next regular meeting of the City Council will be held Wednesday, August 13th, 2025, 7 p.m. right here in our council chambers. Thanks for your attendance. This meeting's adjourned.